11 minutes after 8 here on The Morning Show, and we're joined on the telephone by Dennis Halliday, former head of the UN's Oil for Food Program, and he's also former UN Assistant Secretary General. Dennis, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Maybe you just want to start by asking you your reaction to the Bush speech last night.
Well, I see it, of course, as basically a declaration of war, setting a target which is not going to be accomplished, I don't think, by Baghdad. And that's a very sad situation to find ourselves in at this state. It's also a rejection of international law, a rejection of the United Nations, and a rejection of the United Nations that it is an organization that stands for peace and not for war. In fact, the UN, I think, is a stronger body today than it was a few days ago when it wavered between war and peace, and now it stood firmly for peace. And I think the vast majority of member states, sovereign member states, would endorse the stance taken by France and Germany and others that war is simply redundant, not necessary, uncivilized, and completely inappropriate to deal with the frustration we all share with the disarmament of Iraq as per various resolutions.
Well, Tony Blair, in a speech in the House of Commons, said that France is responsible for the failure of the Security Council to come up with a resolution that would authorize war, and that the French veto threat, in essence, destroyed the ability of the Security Council to function. What's your opinion of that?
Well, my opinion is that France should be congratulated. France took a position not for anything to do with altruism. France also has interests in Iraq, oil interests, as does the United States. But France has respected the charter and international law, which is designed to prevent war, not create war. France has taken a position that, look, we've got inspectors in the country, progress is slow, but we're making progress. We're talking to Baghdad. We're destroying these Al-Samoud missiles, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, why go to war when there's any remote chance of solving the problem peacefully? I mean, it's not rocket science. It seems pretty simple stuff to me.
But Tony Blair's argument was that if France had been more rough and tough, Saddam Hussein would have buckled much earlier and have been much more forthcoming in disarming.
Well, I know that's a theory that, you know, the threat of violence is going to produce results. I'm not sure that really is correct. It hasn't produced results. I mean, we can't have a more threatening situation than we have now with troops, not just in Kuwait, but already in Iraq, north and south, in breach of the sovereign rights of Iraq. It's not working, is it? So I think Krantz was right that there's a more civilized way to do business, and we didn't pursue it fully, and that's a tragedy.
Dennis Halliday, one of the things I just so enjoyed getting a chance on C-SPAN to hear Robin Cook, the former leader in the House of Commons speech, in its entirety, and he made a lot of amazing points, one of them being that there does seem to be this incredible juxtaposition of here we're saying there's no more time, we've been waiting 12 years for Iraq to comply and they haven't, and then he brought up the fact that the article that that said that the Israel has to evacuate the occupied territories, I don't know why I can't say this more clearly, has been going on for some 30 years, so why is there this difference in urgency? What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, you can imagine in the Middle East itself, the perception of the United States and the United Nations is one of absolute horror and double standards because they see Israel and the Iraqi situation entwined. Mm-hmm. They see the double standards, as you just described it, that somehow Israel can get away with murder, literally, and not be attacked happily and not have sanctions and not have all these terrible things we've imposed on Iraq. But nevertheless, by failing to put pressure on Israel, we have allowed the Palestinians to lose their lives, and it's happening, sadly, every day. And it's gone off the headlines. We don't seem to even notice it, hardly. So this double standard is a problem. So Robin Cook is absolutely right. I mean, anybody who knows the Middle East knows we've got to solve the Palestine-Israeli difference. I mean, that's just fundamental. And if that had been signed, resolved, I think the United States would be the hero of the day. And everybody would be extremely grateful, including myself. But unfortunately, Mr. Bush has set that aside out of some bizarre and blind support for Israel, perhaps due to the Israeli lobby in this country. I don't quite know. But I think it's misplaced and very unfortunate and very dangerous for the Israelis. I really worry about the safety of Israel if this war takes place that Mr. Bush seems to have his heart set upon. But these 12 years we've waited, it sounds almost benign, but it's not benign. We've had a very vicious regime of sanctions during these 12 years. It's a form of warfare. In fact, some people consider it a weapon of mass destruction in itself. UNICEF has reported these very high levels of child mortality. We probably have lost over a million people, largely children, during this 12-year period, which we don't seem to care about, and the council is well aware of, but has sustained the sanctions nevertheless. So this has been a very bad policy. Containment does not work. It's the price we pay is far too high. Loss of life cannot be, I think, excused under any circumstances. And, you know, we failed on that front. So what we're about to do, it just makes it worse.
Well, last Friday we had a guest on the morning show, an Iraqi American, who made a very sort of strange argument, which was that it appears that the only way that the sanctions are ever going to be dropped is if Saddam Hussein is removed from power in Iraq. And so even though he knows the dangers of war, he also knows the dangers of the sanctions, which, as you just said, probably have been responsible for the death of a million Iraqi children over the last 12 years. So how can you respond that maybe war is a lesser evil than the sanctions?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't argue that war is a lesser evil. I mean, they're both unacceptable under law. They're both improper ways to deal with the government in Baghdad, and I don't think I quite get your point, but
Well, if you want the sanctions to be dropped, it would be obvious that once Bush wins his war, the sanctions will be dropped.
Well, I hope you're right, but, you know, Mr. Bush hasn't said that. There's been no reference in 1441 or since that I'm aware of a commitment that sanctions will terminate the moment the United States invades and occupies this country. But, you know, the requirement that the United States has very honestly given us, and for what, probably 10 years, that they will never lift economic sanctions as long as Saddam Hussein is in power, which is, of course, not part of any UN resolution, not part of any provision of international law, but strictly a U.S. position, which the rest of us sort of have ignored. But now, finally, Mr. Bush has become even more honest and said it straight. Until he's gone, it's just unworkable. We will not continue to do business. But this is itself is a breach of law. This is not anything to do with the United Nations. Removing heads of state is not a UN policy. Assassination is not allowed under international law, nor the constitution of this country. There's an executive order which prohibits the assassination of heads of state, as I recall.
Our guest is Dennis Halliday, former head of the UN's Oil for Food Program and also former UN Assistant Secretary General. And I have to say, Dennis, you're one of the first people I've heard in, say, the last 24 hours or so who has praised the stand of the UN. In fact, it seems that there's been a lot of criticism, not just of the UN, but of Secretary General Kofi Annan in particular, people feeling that his response, I guess this morning, saying they thought his response was incredibly weak, and others really saying the security and, you know, the UN has lost its legitimacy. So can you address the issue of Kofi Annan and his response in particular?
Well, I am critical of the Secretary General for a number of reasons, that he hasn't used his authority to identify what's been happening in Iraq for many years. He's never had the courage to announce, for example, that the reports of UNICEF are correct and that sanctions, in fact, have killed large numbers of children. So he's been very subtle and careful not to offend Washington, I guess. That's disappointing. But nevertheless, when it came to the crunch and he was asked and he addressed the issue of what's happening now without the benefit of this new resolution of the United Nations Security Council, he very honestly said that interpreting the charter, that without approval under Chapter 7, Article 42, no member state, no United Nations force can undertake action. So therefore, he just spoke, he addressed the Charter, and he relayed the interpretation of the Charter, and he's quite correct to do so, and I congratulate him for doing that. So I think we have to accept that's his job. We may not like it, but that's not a problem for him. He's simply doing his job. But I think the United Nations, I know there's going to be a lot of bad vibes and bad news and unkind words used against the United Nations, particularly in this country, but not, in my view, overseas. So we need to watch overseas media and how they deal with it. But it'll pass, and I think that those in Washington who have their heads properly screwed on will understand that, in fact, protecting the United Nations and having it stand for a peaceful resolution of differences is, in fact, in the best interest of the United States, in addition, and that will come out. But in the short run, of course, we're going to have a lot of UN bashing going on, and certainly in this country.
Dennis Halliday, if in fact this war is a violation of the UN Charter, what mechanism exists to bring to justice those who have violated the Charter?
Well, the way the UN has worked for many years, with some success and of course some failures, is the only tool really at its disposal, which is that of moral authority. And most member states prefer to remain in the good books of the United Nations and bow to the pressures of international law in as much as they can. And that has worked, I suppose, reasonably well. But we're always going to have these aberrations where this doesn't work and where we resort to other tactics. And the Chapter 7 is the key chapter of the Charter, which allows the Security Council to take action. Article 41 is the article that allows the Security Council to take action short of actual physical violence, short of warfare. And that's where sanctions come from. Well, of course, sanctions, as applied to Iraq over 12 years without proper monitoring, I think have proven to be a disaster and will never, ever, I believe, be repeated. And but other devices, can and have been used. And we failed clearly to put the right sort of pressure on the Baghdad government to disarm. They, of course, feel they have disarmed. We tend to forget the good work done by UNSCOM for many, many years in the early 90s when Iraq, in fact, was disarmed in the views of many, including people like Scott Ritter, certainly in terms of nuclear capacity. There are devices, and to go to war is the ultimate and final and device, which is a clear signal of absolute failure on the part of the UN to have done its job properly. But I mean, the view of most member states, and I think most is a mass majority, we do not feel we've reached the point where that is necessary in the case of Iraq. We can continue to do work with inspections and other forms of pressure. And why are we rushing into a war with great haste and recklessness without knowing the consequences, without planning for the aftermath of refugees and humanitarian crises that may emerge in Iraq and in the neighborhood?
That is one of the other things that Robin Cook, again, former leader in the House of Commons, was saying. He really outlined quite clearly how this particular conflagration is different than, say, what happened with Kosovo and what happened with the first Gulf War, that there was a united sort of international opinion, and that this is really different, and that difference was even the more the reason why that there should be some, a gathering of forces in the UN, and that the U.S. should not do what it's doing. So do you agree that there obviously are very clear differences between some of the previous Gulf War in particular, I think?
Yes, I think in the first Gulf War, we were all greatly disappointed that that Saddam Hussein could not be convinced to leave Iraq peacefully. I mean, he made offers, as you well know. He said he would leave Kuwait if Israel left the occupied territories, and the United States dismissed that offer out of hand. So we ended up, unfortunately, with the first Gulf War, which was legitimate in the sense it was approved by the Security Council of the United Nations under Chapter 7, under Article 42, and the United States was the lead country in assembling this force and undertaking the war, which happened. The result was, of course, we had war crimes committed in the name of the United Nations, which is a tragedy which has never been addressed. I dare say never will be, but it's something we cannot, I think, forget. And I believe it's one of the reasons that some of the member states have been reluctant to see the U.S. again lead a war against Iraq, because we don't want to see war crimes committed yet again by United States forces on behalf of the United Nations. So if we're going to have a very ugly war, I suppose some are arguing it's better that the UN does it, the U.S. does it alone, and not drag the UN into another illegal activity which will undoubtedly produce more war crimes against humanity.
Maybe you should elaborate what war crimes were committed by U.S. troops in the first Gulf War.
Well, the Geneva Conventions, prohibit the specific targeting of civilian infrastructure with a view to putting pressure on civilians to somehow get involved or bring down a government or end a war, whatever the issue is. And we know from the Pentagon Papers, they're on the Internet, that a decision was made to very deliberately destroy electric power production capacity and water treatment distribution systems in Iraq, both of which, when combined, produced horrific health crises throughout the towns and villages of the country, with soaring death rates resulting from cholera, typhoid, and other waterborne disease. And that's continued, in fact, to be the prime killer of young children, as UNICEF reports to this day. That is a breach of international law, to destroy water systems and power, and that's exactly, I believe, what the Bush government is planning to do yet again. The use of depleted uranium is considered by most to be a breach of the law in that it's a nuclear weapon, a very subtle form maybe, but nevertheless has a plutonium content, leaves behind a residue which has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. We had the Basra Road massacre. We had other situations which are in breach of law. You know, it's well known. I'm just repeating what I think we all know.
Dennis Halliday, also on C-SPAN last night, I had a chance to watch about a 40-minute newscast from Iraqi satellite television, which was also quite fascinating, and there was quite a lot of voices saying, making the Israel-Palestine connection to what's happening in Iraq. There were images of demonstrations in Cairo and Pakistan, unionists demonstrating there against the U.S. Policies, and even reports about human shields who are coming from a variety of countries, something I haven't heard anything about here, going to particular sites in Iraq to try to stop the U.S. from hitting those sites. Does this kind of activity, in your mind, have any effect in a war or planned war like this?
Well, you know, it should do. I think if we looked more keenly at the Middle East and the area immediately around Iraq, we would have understood quite clearly that these countries, although they maybe not support the government, certainly do not support the regime in Baghdad, they nevertheless do not feel any military threat from Iraq. And this is true of Kuwait and Saudi Arabia and all the allies of the United States, who have ultimately been coerced into some form of collaboration with the U.S. in this forthcoming war. I mean, the reality is that Iraq is just not seen, is known not to be a military power of any consequence today after the last, whatever it is, 12 years. The fact that the Arab street, public opinion in the Arab world, is totally against American intervention for a number of reasons, not just that Iraq is an Arab state, a Muslim state, and an Islamic state in addition to that, although secular, as we all know. But it's just the further presence and intervention of U.S. troops in the Middle East is just likely to trigger off more angst and more anger against the United States, which, you know, none of us want. This is not a positive thing for any of us. Even those of us who may be critical of Washington policies are not in favor of isolating the United States and creating more resentment against the U.S. Because of foreign policy. This is counterproductive stuff. I would like to see the U.S. Play a positive role in all of these countries and work towards a democracy in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and other places. You know, this would be helpful. But we're destroying these opportunities. We're destroying U.S. leadership and credibility by undertaking a war which is not approved by the United Nations, not approved by the Arab League, simply not approved, period, by most countries around the world. This is not a good way for the U.S. to move forward.
Dennis Halliday, what is the standing of the U.S. internationally? Are we maybe not, obviously, in the Middle East, I can imagine what the standing is, but in the rest of the world, is the United States regarded as a pariah?
That's a really ugly word, and I sort of pejorative. I would hate to use it. I mean, I recently have been in Ireland, where I've been speaking, 10, 20 times. And, you know, speaking to an Irish audience is always interesting, because you look out there and you know everybody in the audience has an uncle, a brother, a sister, a cousin, a mother, whatever, under Mr. Bush. They can't start to understand how this has got to this stage and why the American public opinion has allowed Mr. Bush to take these actions, why they've put him in power with a policy which is obviously very dangerous and unattractive. Now, I know these policies were not made known by Mr. Bush when he ran for office, so these are a bit of a shock, perhaps, to those who were not well informed. So I don't think people are still seeing the United States as a positive element, but they're horrified by what's happening. I think that would be true of many countries. But, you know, with time, this thing is deteriorating. And I think with time, people are saying, look, we like to distinguish between Washington and the generous and good people of the United States who we know and maybe we love. But after time, the U.S. is a great democracy, and we have to assume the Americans support Mr. Bush. And therefore, we also now are angry with the Americans themselves. I mean, that's what's happening.
And as Dennis pointed out to me when I spoke to him yesterday, there were troops at Shannon Airport in Ireland, which I had no idea there would be troops there. So, American troops, I should say. So, Dennis...
I think for many Irish, that situation has gotten worse, because the Irish government said, look, don't worry. We're working with the Americans. We're collaborating with Mr. Bush. But that's only a temporary situation until the United Nations authorizes this war. Of course, the United Nations has not authorized this war. So now the question is, the Irish government is collaborating with the U.S. on an illegal war. And that's a nightmare for many Irish who are very supportive of the United Nations. You know, we've given a lot, proportionally a great deal, to the U.N. in terms of peacekeeping capability and what have you. We enjoy a good reputation in the U.N. And to see Ireland being dragged into an illegal war is very frustrating for many Irish people.
Dennis Halliday has been our guest again, former head of the U.N.'s Oil for Food Program and former U.N. Assistant Secretary General. Really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, Dennis.
You're most welcome anytime.
Coming up after the news, we're going to hear from another pundit, I guess you could call her, Arianna Huffington, and her new book, Pigs at the Trough, How Corporate Greed and Political Corruption Are Undermining America. Just had a chance to speak with her yesterday. So stay tuned for that. Here's Chris Bruni.